Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we will be interviewing one Rabbi Yisroel Finman, who is in charge of kashrus in the Balkans, lives in Albania, and happens to be one of my older brothers. We are very happy to have him on and enlighten us about what's going on in places like Albania. Yeah, this is radio worth listening to. The portion of the week is the portion of Bo. It is to be found in Exodus chapter 10 and following. This is where the Exodus occurs. It's right here in chapter and Parsha's Bo. We have music of all kinds throughout the show. A wonderful Hasidic story all the way at the end. You want to stay all the way till 11:58 before we do anything else. Let's go right to the news. Here's a name now to remember. This is the next one on a long list. Ben Hassin. Remember that name. Ben Hassin, the son of Israelis living in Canada for 30 years, has been under arrest since June of 2015 in an unnamed Arab country for the murder of a taxi driver. Hassin went to visit his grandparents in the Arab country and while there decided to enlist in the fight against ISIS with a local militia. He is facing the death penalty. Keep soon. This is a story that's not going to go away. A Palestinian driver who drove his vehicle into a West Bank bus stop in a car ramming attack was shot and killed by Israeli troops at the scene. There were no other injuries. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced the plans for 2,500 homes in the West Bank. Most of the housing units will be in developed cities like Ariel, with some of the construction in new areas. The announcement followed the approval earlier this week of 566 new housing units in Jerusalem neighborhoods of Ramat Shlomo, Ramat, and Pisgat Ze'ev. Housing unit is another way of saying apartment. Prime Minister Netanyahu met with Rudy Giuliani, cyber advisor to President Trump. They went to Israel. Giuliani conveyed a personal message from Trump in advance of the meeting to take place between Netanyahu and Trump in D.C. in February. The FBI said that the bomb threats made to over 30 JCCs in 20 states in the last 2 weeks are being investigated as a hate crime and not terrorism. Calling them a hate crime gives extra funding to state and local authorities. I suppose it's the best way of doing it. And finally, Israel will accept 100 refugee orphans from Syria for the first time since the civil war began in 2011. The children will have temporary citizen status. After 4 years, the children can have their temporary residence status upgraded to full citizenship and be allowed to live in Israel for the rest of their lives. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. 858-9000 or visit them on the web at spexhoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on now line a person to me who has felt like a brother to me my whole life. It is actually indeed my brother Yisrael, who's also Rabbi Yisrael Finman. He is the organizer of Balkan Kosher, lives in the country of Albania, and we'd like to welcome, with no further discussion, Rabbi Yisrael Finman. How are you, Yisrael?
Rabbi Herschel Finman, I'm doing well, as good. I'm sure you are.
Good to hear. Talk a little bit louder into the phone, please.
Sure, thanks.
Okay, so now, I'm just being glib here, but for a period of your life, you lived in Albany, New York. Did living in Albany, New York, prepare you for what you got when you went to live in Albania?
Got to correct you. I was in Syracuse, New York, but that probably got me prepared to live in Greece for 5 years before I moved to Albania.
Okay. Indeed. So, okay, so what's a nice Jewish boy doing in Albania?
Oh, boy. You know, you don't get there because you wake up one morning and say, oh, God, do I want to go to Azerbaijan because of Aksakistan or Albania? Let me toss the dice and see what comes up. No, basically, I've been in Greece for 5 years, commuting back and forth, involved with Kashrus. My wife's son is a Chabad rabbi in Salonika, Greece, northern Greece. And as you well know, in the Chabad world, you have your base operations and you start moving out into the suburban neighborhoods. In a country, small country, that means the next town, or in this case, the next country. So we checked out Macedonia, checked out Montenegro and Albania, and Kosovo, and these all became involved with the Chabad of Saloniki, which is the Balkan Jewish communities as an organization. About 5 years ago, he was looking to build a kosher restaurant and to figure out how to attract the tourists from Israel that used to go to Turkey and were now traveling all over the world instead. And my forte, aside from being a congregational rabbi for years, was in the tourism business and in the kosher certification business. So when your wife says, will you please go to Europe and see what Yo has for you, please check it out. After about 6 months, I figured, okay, it's time to go. And that's how I got involved in northern Greece and the Balkan countries. Albania just became a simple extension of what we were doing after 5 years in Greece. Now the Israeli tourists want to check out the rest of the Balkans. I personally like Albania, and access to Greece was a little bit easier, as well as to America, a little bit easier than coming out of Montenegro or Macedonia. So that is how I wound up in Albania.
I would say the word easier would be comparable, yes. As you're talking Albania versus, say, Montenegro, or, you know, so, okay, easier is definitely relative. So let's put this in perspective, including Salonika and this whole region that your stepson and you have organized into the Balkan Jewish communities. Mm-hmm. How many Jews live in that region?
Okay, let's break it down by country. Salonika has 900 outlying Jewish areas that are, some of them are ancient from the time of the Greeks. Yanina has about 25 families left in a synagogue that's 500 years old and a community that's well over 2,000 years old. Larissa still has 150 Jews and the only sanctioned, totally Jewish public day school, maybe in the whole world for all I know. Volos, which is a little bit further down, has this community center with 200 Jews. That's northern part of the country. Although Veria, which only has an active Jewish community, it has the second oldest synagogue, or one of the oldest synagogues in the continent, built by the Spanish refugees in 1510. Beautiful, beautiful old building. Still has three old people living there, but no active community. That's Greece. In Macedonia, there's about 150, and a very beautiful synagogue and a completely unique Holocaust museum right up the downtown area in the former Jewish neighborhood that relates only to the destruction of the Balkan Jewish community, its history, its inception from ancient times, and its destruction. And it's probably the only one in the country that does not deal with Western Europe, with Polish and or Hungarian or any other nation, but strictly the Balkan countries. Anybody ever gets to Skopje, it's worth making the trip there if you're anywhere in the neighborhood.
I'll drop by next time I'm there.
40 Jews. Kosovo has about 200. And Albania, probably about 40 or maybe 50, including Israeli businessmen that are there.
Okay, so you're looking at less than 1,500 Jews. And that's in an area of comparable to the United States. How big would you say?
Okay, people keep asking. I never quite look at it. Greece is decent size. Probably, let's say, New England, maybe a little bit bigger than New England.
A little bit bigger than New England, okay. And in New England, there are 1.5 million Jews. So you're talking 1,500. It's 100,000 times more in New England than it is in the area that you found yourself. So of all those areas, you picked Albania to headquarter yourself with its 50 Jews in the entire country, a population of 4 million people. There are 50 people who identify themselves as Jews. Why Albania, Rabbi Yisrael Finman?
Albania primarily, like I said, for two reasons. Having been centered in Salonika, which for 300 years was the largest Jewish community in the world. I say that again. When the Spanish Jews arrived after the expulsions in 1492 and were welcomed by the Ottoman Empire, they built Salonika into being a power, economic powerhouse of the Ottoman Empire, but also into the most vibrant Jewish and Torah institution in the world. 50,000, the majority of the population. It's a lot of the history is still there, and a lot of the people are still there, even back from Rome, from the Greek times. The Israeli tourists were asking specifically what's outside of Greece, and they named Montenegro, Macedonia, and Albania as the top choices. And having been in all those countries, it's just easier to procure kosher food in Albania because of their connection with economic connection and social connection with Italy. There's a lot of imports from Italy, which has plenty of kosher foods into it, whereas Montenegro, most of its food comes from the former Yugoslavia, as does Macedonia. So really it was a matter of the kosher foods. And once again, I have to be in Greece two or three times a month, and it's just much easier to get in from Tirana, Albania, than it was from Podgorica or from Skopje.
Okay, so now you work with an organization you're calling Kosher Balkans. What's so kosher about the Balkans? It doesn't impress me that this would be with a population of so few Jews that there would be a need for kosher food manufacturing and with kosher supervision, which costs money, takes time. Sometimes there's a change in process. So tell us about the kosher status of the Balkans, Rabbi Yisrael.
Sure. Well, I'll answer it with a question, because that's what we Jews always do. How many Jews live in China? And how much kosher food production certification is in China?
Okay. I can't imagine there are many Jews that live in China, but there's a lot of stuff coming out of China, yes.
Right. So, and that's exactly what it is. Plus, add the tourism, the growing tourism, because there are more and more Jews looking for kosher and synagogue going to China than there certainly was 20 years ago. It's a matter of two things. Tourism, which means domestic consumption, but more primarily exports. Food manufacturers in the world export all over the world. Nobody relies totally on their own consumption whatsoever. Exports drive the world economy. In Greece, it's taken a little while to get moving, but Greek olive oil is now the premier olive oil in the world, especially with all the scandals about adulterated oils coming out of Spain and Italy and even the U.S. About 3 years ago, when there was a poor harvest of olives, people turned to Greece for their olives, which are supreme, much better than any other country, except maybe Israel, of course, and discovered the Kalamata. So now the Kalamata olive is on the world map, and tons and tons, literally, tons and tons of containers are going to the U.S., into Israel, into China, into Russia, everywhere. And then there's other very good food. The country just has blessed with good weather, microclimates, and everything that grows there is incredible. If you go to Israel and you get a can of peaches, it's coming out of Greece. Plain and simple. Only place to go. But on other food items, they do have to compete with China, with Turkey, with Bulgaria, and with Ukraine, which are predominant exporters to that part of the world, not so much the U.S., but to that part of the world.
Okay, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Rabbi Yisrael Finman, who's my older brother, one of my older brothers, and is in charge of the Balkan Kosher. We're talking about Albania and Judaism. So tell us, like, how does this work? You go into there's a product that you'd like to see supervised kosher. So here, the factory manager and the administrative staff, there's a good chance that to them, Jews are just this fictitious character. They've never seen a Jew. There's only 50 in a country of 4 million. There's a very good chance they've never actually seen a Jew. And I imagine now that you're not living in Albania that long, your Albanian is probably not that great. So how can you convey an interest, an Albanian food manufacturer, that he needs to pay you to become kosher?
That's a good question.
And if you knew better, you would do it better, right? I understand, yes.
Of course. Now, there's a methodology to it all. The first thing I have to ascertain is the company involved in exports? There's actually two things I'm working on now and always have in mind. One is the export market. And for that, a company has to be already involved in exports. If not, it's much too difficult for them to be up to standards, of world standards, and to deal with all the regulations that each and every country has in the export world. So the very first thing is to look at their profiles online. In Albania, I'm very fortunate that the Department of Agriculture, the Ministry of Agriculture, gave me a list of every single food processor in the country. In Albania, I also work with an agronomist who has a PhD and knows the food industry very well. And we have prioritized which countries are capable, which companies are capable, which ones have exported, which ones could be good for the domestic market. That's tourism is growing tremendously in Albania. It's a national project. And basically, I will do first contact as much as possible. But because if you have in general, there's two people in every factory in these countries that speak English. The export manager, because if you don't speak English, you're not exporting into the world. And somebody in quality control, because you're college educated, and English is almost mandatory on the college level of science in this day and age. So usually I find people to speak with. But if not, and I always bring along the consultant, because that creates the Albanian to Albanian or the Greek to Greek or the Serbian to Serbian connection there, which makes me not a complete outsider, but a friend of a friend. And that helps a long way in smoothing things out and creating credibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. How's your reception been as far as people coming under your supervision, Rabbi Yisrael?
It's actually reasonable considering the odds of what I'm up against. Most of the companies are just not ready for supervision, and many of them cannot wrap their heads around another set of regulations. Some of them are still trying to deal with very simple cleaning processes like HACCP and ISO, which are standardized methods of cleaning, to get that up to EU standards. It took Greece a while, but every company now does clean according to those specs because the EU demands it. Albanian companies, one after the next, are now finally wrapping their heads around it and bringing themselves into compliance in order to ascend to the EU. So we come along with more information about another regulation. They understand the idea of regulations, but they may not be ready for cashews. And that's been a problem, following procedures, signing a contract, that you can't buy a product, an ingredient, without running it past the rabbi. That's been a major obstacle in a number of Albanian companies, even though they export. They just don't see it. If I can get a bargain on this brand of acetic acid or this brand of oil. Well, why not, Rabbi? You know, we're in business to make money. And all I asked them, it's in the contract you sign. It says here, if I want to buy a different ingredient, I have to call the rabbi first to find out. Maybe it's kosher, maybe it's kosher compliant, maybe it's not. And they just can't wrap their heads around it. That's been the hardest part in Albania, by far. Very frustrating, because they mean well, they're trying to do their best, and it's just like one little piece there they just don't understand. Well, why? It's just oil, Rabbi. It's just oil. There's no animals in it. What should be the problem?
Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, we get that in the Michigan Kosher Supervisors and businesses in Ferndale, same thing. So it's just a matter of educating and getting people to want to know about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's talk about Israel Finman. So you're the 51st Jew living in Albania, and I would assume that you're probably the only Sabbath observant Jewish person in Albania. So how's that working out for you?
Backtrack on the statistics. I'm the only rabbi in Albania, for sure. There happens to be another Shomer Shabbos Jew in Albania, and he's got a story beyond belief. A young man, father Iranian, born in Iran, his mother was Russian, they met in Moscow, then they went to Iran, he was born there, then the father left, the mother went back to Moscow. He became a dentist by the age of 20 in Slovenia, and then he was like all upset with the Arabs, so he confronted an Arab demonstration, and they beat him up, and he was afraid for his life, and he felt that Mother Russia was anti-Israel, so he went south, he wound up into Turkey, he lost his passport, was in jail there, escaped, wound up into Greece, was detained several times, came across Chabad in Salonika. Our lawyers tried to help him with the Israeli embassy, but because he didn't have proof of who he was, he couldn't get to Israel. He went down to Athens just to get away from Saloniki police, was there for about a year, and then there's too many Arab immigrants, and so he said, I got to get someplace safe. We told him Albania safe. It's a national priority. It's sort of part of the religious and cultural aspect. If you're a stranger and you're in our country, you're safe. And we'll talk about how that played out during World War II very effectively. So he basically walked from Athens up and over the mountains into Albania and was caught and thrown into a detention camp until they could figure out who he was. We vouched for him. He got out. He tried to go to Russia. They wouldn't let him in. Got shipped back to Albania, put into another prison. Now he's out. Meanwhile, he's Shomer Shabbos. He has Skype conversations and learning with one of the Chabad rabbis. He's just praying to figure out some way that God will have Rachmanis on him and get him to Israel where he can sit and learn.
Uh-huh. So he's like stuck.
He is stuck in no man's. I keep telling him, write this all down, and we'll get it to a scriptwriter, because you can't make this stuff up. Nobody would believe it. But you have a story, and you're going to make $1 million on your story when it turns into a feature film if they get the right person to play you, because this is beyond absurd. But I know it's for true. I've known this man for 4 years already, this young man. So he's the other Shomer Shabbos in the country. But how is it, basically? It's a strange experience. I feel like I'm on a retreat. I could go away maybe into the mountains on a retreat for the weekend, and nobody else is there. But at least you're in a nice, quiet, beautiful place. And that's what I basically am doing there. It's a little rough. I could go to Salonika, like I said, a few times a month, and there's a Jewish community down there. So I go to synagogue. I'll go to the community center. It has Shabbat meals every Friday night. The rabbi is gracious, been in his home, interfacing with his family, his wife and his kids for Shabbat lunch. So there is a little bit to keep me going. If I was momish in the middle of nowhere, it would be a little rougher. But sometimes you go where you got to go. I mean, you as a Chabad rabbi understand, and I've seen plenty of them, and you've seen plenty of rabbis that go out to the wilderness, because that's what it's all about, making connections. And here, because of how the connections with Chabad and connections with Kashrus, at least once a month, I have some Israelis or American or French or British tourists that get in touch with us. How do we keep kosher? Where's the synagogue, et cetera, et cetera. And I produce kosher lists of how you can survive on the food, what comes from Italy, what comes from Turkey, et cetera, et cetera. And I've had a number of them in my home for a nice, warm, cooked meal as they travel around. So I've sort of been an oasis for other people. And my battery recharges. It comes from learning, comes from being on the web, from all the websites that I learn with, and Skype learning with people, and then plugging into the community in Saloniki. So it's doable. Is it Detroit? No, it's not Detroit. It's not Brooklyn. It's not Jerusalem. But it works for now.
Mm-hmm. So you're also organizing, trying to get the tourism up in Albania. I'm sure the Albanians are probably jumping up and down and saying, yippee, somebody's actually trying to promote our country. Tell us about Albanian tourism and Jewish Albanian tourism.
Surely, yes. Ladino Heritage Tours is a company we put together about a year ago.
Say the name again.
Ladino Heritage Tours.
Uh-huh.
We have a Facebook page. We haven't put up the website yet because we're not active. We will be shortly. It was a really response as we networked with the Ladino diaspora, with the Saloniki diaspora in America, trying to make a connection with people whose parents and grandparents and great-grandparents lived in Salonika or northern Greece. So we found a lot of elderly who couldn't believe that there's still Jews there and couldn't believe that it's possible to go back. But even more than that, they said, my grandson, my granddaughter has been on birthright. They went to Israel. They're more connected with being Jewish than they were before. They don't understand what a glorious heritage it is to come from Saloniki. Can you create a birthright tour to Saloniki? So we started working on youth tours, which we're ready to rock and roll this coming season, to bring young people. But that will also start bringing families as well. And specifically, part sightseeing, local, part Greek, you got to go to Mount Olympus, et cetera, et cetera. But also looking into the Jewish heritage that's extant, as well as what's hidden around the country, and to meet with members of the community whose families have been there since the Spanish expulsion. In Albania, because Israelis are already starting to come, 4 years ago there were backpackers, now there's individual tourists. And there's actually one travel agency, the largest one in Albania, that has been cultivating the Israeli tourism market. The country itself has made it a national priority and created a ministry of tourism, and each city has a ministry of tourism to attract outside tourism. So tourism growth is very strong. The numbers are still small because it's in its infancy. But it multiplies, doubles, triples each year. And this is the wave of the future. It is an extremely beautiful, friendly country. And compared to almost any place else you can go, it's cheap as can be.
Okay.
You get a very nice 3 or 4-star room for $30 a night.
Well, that's
not
cheap.
Not a problem. Anywhere in the country.
Okay, so what's to see in Albania? Why should I go there?
Okay. Well, let me just talk about a little bit about more of the Jewish of it, and then we'll go into the general country, because it's gorgeous. Jews have been in Albania since ancient times. Nobody knows exactly when, but they probably came in with the Greeks, because there's always been a border that went back and forth between Greek and Albania. So as Jews came into Greece in the time of the Greeks, they came further north into the Balkans. But also the Jews that came in the time of the destruction of the First Temple, when slaves were being carried off out of Jerusalem, they wound up along the Adriatic coast. That's how the city of Yanina in western Greece became populated with Romanite Jews. There is a synagogue, archaeology of a synagogue in Saranda, which is on the southwestern coast, maybe 15, 20 miles from Greece. Of a fourth century synagogue and a museum built right next door to show the whole thing. So we have proof that Jews were there in the fourth century for sure. Folklore has it much earlier than that. Throughout the Ottoman Empire, there were Jews have lived at some time or another in every major city in Albania. and there are four or five historians who specialize in Jewish history. And I've been in touch with them, and there's, once again, this one says this, this one says that. But you take a city like Berati, in the mountains, in the middle of the country. It is renowned for its windows, a UNESCO city, very pretty, very nice. But everybody knows the old Muslim quarter was originally Jewish for 150 years. There's still one mosque there that has Jewish stars on the front of the building, and the mosque don't understand why. They don't understand, the Muslims don't understand, why does it happen like this? I tell them, because you took over a synagogue. They don't want to hear it, but that's the of it all. When they got kicked out of there, they went to the city of Girocastra and built this Jewish community there. Tirana, Kruje, Korcha, all these, and Skroda, major cities, have all had Jewish communities at different times in their history. There's a concept that the Albanians have, and this is a remarkable thing that you don't find anywhere else, called Besa, which basically means if you step foot into our soil, you are our guest. And they really treat all guests just like our father Abraham and Sarah did. You came into their land near their tent. They welcomed you like family. And there, this is sacrosanct. Absolutely. In World War II, Albania became a refuge for Jews who were fleeing from the Nazis. The first ones came, a family from Austria in 1936. And the king found out about it, met with them, and he issued an order to all European embassies to give out visas to any Jew that wanted to get out of their countries. Ahead of the Nazis or during occupation, they got Albanian visas and they left. Albert Einstein left Germany on an Albanian visa to get to America.
Oh, really?
Yes. Little known history there. Albania, before the war, they've had a large Jewish population, but before the war, there was about 500 or 600 Jews in the country. After the war, there were 3,000. The Nazis only caught maybe 10 or 12 Jews in the country during the 2.5 years they were there. Every Jewish family was hidden by a Muslim family, sometimes in plain sight, and when it became too difficult, like in the city of Tirana, they smuggled them out in donkey carts and however they could and got them to relatives way up in the mountains, way out in the hinterlands. And they put them in basements, they put them in garages, they put them in barns, they fixed it up, they put them with their family sometimes. They gave them Albanian names, Albanian clothes, and there they were, waiting out the war. And each one of these families understood they could be killed on sight if anybody found out they were Jews. But they stood up to the Nazis, they stood up to the fascists, because Bessa, you're in our land, we take care of you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up really soon. Anything else you'd like to add, Yisrael, before we have to go?
Albania is a beautiful country. Greece is beautiful. Montenegro, Macedonia, they're all beautiful countries. They're wonderful places to come. I encourage American tourists to go past Rome or Milan, to go past Athens, and check out these countries. They're beautiful people, beautiful lands. If you need anything, just get in touch with us. If you keep kosher, we can help you find kosher food, send you one of our lists, and just in general. There's a beautiful world out there. And I happen to be in a beautiful part of it. I'm very thankful that this is where life has taken me. This is what God's directed me to.
Okay, wonderful. Our guest today again has been Rabbi Yisrael Finman. His first claim to fame is that he's my older brother, and he didn't get that claim to fame until he was seven, even. So he had no claim to fame for the first 7 years of his life. And now he is the rabbi of the Balkans, and he's in town visiting, and we were glad that he did and glad he had a chance to enlighten us. Thank you so much, Rabbi Yisrael, and we'll be seeing you later.
Absolute pleasure, and I'm so glad to be here.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Yeah, from what I hear, I'd like to go visit Albania. Yeah, you bet. Maybe we'll organize something, the Jewish Hour. You want to go to Albania, Israel, do one of those tours? Just drop me a line at rabbifinman.com, and maybe we'll talk about it. Anyway, up next is a new guy on the block. His name is Nemoul. He is French-Moroccan, living in Israel. He has a last name, but how many people do you know named Nemoul? So that's how he's calling himself. And this is Elokai Neshama, God, the soul you gave to me is pure.
Nishomo shenosato bi tehoiro hi elikai nishomo shenosato bi nishomo shenosato bi tehoiro hi
Show me the kirby, cause the man, my day.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herr Schultzman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have up next for your listening pleasure. This is a young man, not so new to the scene, but we never played him here. His name is Oved Pinchover. He's an Israeli. He has a group called the Oved Pinchover Quintet, which is him and four other musicians by definition. And we're listening to a piece. This is called the Tango Klezmer Blues. And the reason why we're playing this one specifically is because last night we had a wonderful event at Jewish Ferndale. It was the part of the Ferndale Blues Festival. We had a great turnout. A lot of people had lots of fun. We got another one coming up on Thursday night at 8 p.m. We'll be featuring the He Blues, Billy Brandt, and Ethan Davidson. Those are three different acts. And it'll be going on at 8 o'clock at 1725 Pinecrest. $10 cover gets you in the door. There's no alcohol. It's family friendly. Come in, hang out, schmooze, have a good time. That's what it's all about. And that's at Jewish Ferndale. You get more information at jewishferndale.com or by visiting the Facebook page, Jewish Ferndale. So without any further information, Tango Klezmer Blues.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's portion is the portion of Bo. It says, and we have the Exodus over here, the plague of darkness, it says that 80% of the Jewish people died. Why? They got very comfortable. They became very complacent. They liked being in Egypt. It had been almost a year since they had been in slavery. They had money coming out of their ears. They were doing really well. They had riverside properties, the whole business. They said, what do we need to leave for? So God made them an offer they couldn't refuse. You don't want to leave? You're not going to leave. 80% of the population died. It says when Mashiach comes, and we parallel the coming of the Messiah with the Exodus of Egypt. It says, the song goes, no Jew will be left behind. There's not going to be a person who's going to say, you know, I want to stay here in America. Listen, I have a 3-car garage. I have a nice family. My kids are well educated. My wife loves me. I got a great business, yada, yada, yada. No one will even say that. The big difference between the two is we got the Torah in the middle. What did the giving of the Torah do, which is celebrated in a couple of weeks, in the portion of the week? It put reality in our laps. Before the giving of the Torah, everything was theory. Everything was like out there. Any good thing a person did really had no lasting consequence in the world. Comes now with the giving of the Torah, and there is this establishment of permanence that people can relate to God, spirituality. God can relate to us. We have an effect on the world. We can almost see what it is every time when someone does something good, that good is actually being conveyed in the world. So when Mashiach comes and says, hey, it's time to leave and go move to Israel, people are going to say, well, I want to move to Israel. Well, I'm a pioneer over there. Some third world country. First of all, it's not a third world country anymore. And the language, don't worry about it. I think we'll all learn Hebrew very well. They'll have a really good Olpan. It'll be because we'll see that with all that we've been working towards, we will have gotten there. That's what we're hoping for. That's what we learn from now, is let's start working for there. Speaking of there, we've got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way is go to rabbifinman.com, RABBIFINMAN.com. Right on the homepage, you will find a contact link. You contact me, I contact you. We have this conversation. We become good buddies. Everybody's fine. Life is good. Yay. What else will you find at rabbifinman.com? Well, archived editions of the show. And not only of this
edition, but also going back 55 episodes are now archived on the Rabbi Finman website. You'll also find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic Youth Story, ways in which yours truly conveys Jewish ideals and philosophy in a hopefully entertaining and informative way. And also the very, 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 very important donations page. We are getting on, folks, to the end of January. It's February next week already. And we're back to thinking 3 months because we're still trying to get December taken care of. November we did take care of this month, and that was great. But December is a long way off. We really need people like you to step up the plate. Go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page, click any one of the numbers that are already preset, or add your own number. Pay for it with your PayPal account, takes 30 seconds. Pay for it with your credit card, takes 3 minutes. You can make it such that you can become a regular giver so that it happens monthly. And you just do it. You don't even think about it. You're getting the mitzvahs, and God loves you, the whole business, and we get to stay on air. We're coming up to 21 years that we're doing this. Don't like doing internet giving? Understood. Send your donation to any amount to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. You'll be glad that you did. Story involves a certain doctor. He was a doctor of medicine. His name was Chaim Goldinsky. This story happened in the early 1970s. Mr. Goldinsky was paid for. The Israelis used to do this a lot. They would pay for various professionals under the guise of the defense budget, their defense budget, to come to study in various universities and whatnot, and then go back and do things for the Defense Department, and they're expert in their field. So he was a medical doctor doing some sort of biological research. I don't know what the deal over there. Somebody asked, his term was up and he's ready to go back, and someone told him, listen, you've been in New York for 3 years already and you never went to go visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Why don't you go visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe? So he went to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now, this Mr. Dr. Goldinsky had been in a car accident and lost the bottom of both of his legs, unfortunately. So he met the Rebbe. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the Rebbe helped him sit down, and they had this whole discussion about his work entailed and how was this and that, all kinds of things. And finally, the Rebbe said, since you're in town now and you're really in no hurry to get back, I suggest you go visit such and such a doctor. He's an expert in this field. He'll be able to help you with your orthopedic problems. And the guy said, okay, you know. And then he said, the Rebbe concluded, when your daughter gets married, please send me an invitation. Okay, this is what he said. Rabbi, my daughter's 16 years old. He said, when your daughter gets married, send me an invitation, please. Okay. So the guy went and he took the advice. The Rebbe actually made an appointment for him. And he went to the Rebbe. And the doctor said, you've got a problem with your spine that if you don't take care of it, it's going to be debilitating. He says, you can take care of it at Hadassah Hospital when you get back to Israel. It's not, but you need to go. You need to get this taken care of. So he went back to Brooklyn the next day and met the Rebbe in the hall as he was going to the afternoon prayers and told the Rebbe what the doctor had said. And the Rebbe smiled at him and said, you should have a complete recovery. You should be well. And he said, and do not forget to send me an invitation to your daughter's wedding. And before he went to New York, before he got on the plane, he went back and the Rebbe again iterated, do not forget to send me an invitation to your daughter's wedding. 5 years went by, and he was involved with other business he was doing as a doctor in there for the state of Israel, and his daughter got married. And he sent an invitation to the wedding to the Rebbe, like had been asked. That day, he had a massive heart attack and was hospitalized. He was in the hospital for 3 days, and one of his Chabad friends, everybody in Israel's got Chabad friends, everybody's got religious friends, came, and he had received a letter through the Chabad house from the Rebbe addressed to him. And it was a 3.5-page letter, first of all, congratulating him on his daughter's being married and that she's established an everlasting edifice in Israel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then the Rebbe went and told them, but the main thing for you to do right now is to take upon yourself to do all of the commandments without reserve. This is what your mission in life is. And this went into a whole thing. The man, when he was done reading with it, he read it again, and he was crying the whole time. And after about a half hour of rereading the letter, he finally said, "I take upon myself to do all of the commandments." Shortly thereafter, the man died. Like right there. It's not a happy story, but it's understood that this man died having done complete tshuva. He was a complete and total repentant. And therefore it says, lucky is the man who can receive the world to come in one instance. That's going to do it for today. We thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.